Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Wednesday, August 5th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as starting pitcher Treya Savage was placed on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation. Savage will miss at least the next 2 weeks, and with Jameson Taillon coming over via trade, he'll replace Savage in the rotation. It's sort of tough to lose Savage because he's been a key member of plenty of fantasy teams this year, but he's also been really volatile because of the command of that volatile splitter. So hopefully he can return within the next couple of weeks. Reliever Chase Lee was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. I also was happy to see that Matt Waldron was claimed off waivers from the Padres by the Blue Jays. We got to keep a knuckleballer, at least one, in the major leagues at all times. Next, reliever Sam Bachman was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm radial nerve inflammation. He is on the Angels, and it's definitely a concerning injury. The hope is that Bachman can return in a couple of weeks, but it also opens up the ninth inning even further in LA. The battle is now down to Ben Joyce and Sammy Natera Jr., though we could see Jose Fermin mix in as well. Reliever Taylor Saucedo was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Hunter Green was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow soreness. He is set to meet with Dr. Neil L. Attrache, and that is not a good sign, especially for somebody who throws as hard as Green and has the injury history of Green. So hopefully Green gets a good report back from the doctor, but it's not a good sign at this point. Chase Petty could shift from the bullpen to the rotation to replace Hunter Green, and reliever Luis May was recalled from the minors to replace Green on the active roster. And lastly, relief pitcher Ryan Thompson was placed on the 15-day IL with a back strain. The timeline for Thompson's return is unclear, and reliever Philip Abner was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. In terms of transactions, reliever Brad Lord was activated from the 15-day IL after missing about a month with side tightness. The more notable transaction is that starting pitcher Zach Littell was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. He's been a key member of that rotation all year, and the Nationals are holding on to Miles Michaelis, so at least Littell might be able to find another opportunity at this point, but that does open up a rotation spot in our nation's capital. Trevor Williams is likely to shift from the bullpen to the rotation, and he will likely hold down that role until Connelly Early is ready to return from the injured list in the final week of August. Next, starting pitcher Cody Bradford was activated from the 60-day IL to make his season debut against the Giants. Bradford has missed all season following an internal brace procedure, which he underwent last June. Bradford tossed 4 1/3 innings, allowing 5 hits and no earned runs, walking 2 while striking out 5, inducing 9 whiffs with 40% CSW across 70 pitches. And Bradford was already a soft tosser prior to the surgery, but sitting a tick down meant that Bradford's fastball averaged below 89 miles per hour. He does make up for that lack of velocity with elite extension, but Bradford needs to command perfectly to avoid damage on the heater and keep his changeup low to be a potential swatch, a southpaw with a tight changeup. Surprisingly, the four-seamer was elite on Wednesday with 7 whiffs, 42% CSW, and 85% strikes as he kept it upstairs or glove side. So there doesn't seem to be any rust in terms of his post-surgery command. There's no rust for Bradford to shake off, but it is really surprising to see him dominate so much with such a slow fastball. Bradford may be worth your time as a deep league streamer in LA against the Angels next, though I'm not sold that he can thrive consistently without 90 plus mile per hour velo. There are very few pitchers in baseball that can do that. Next, starting pitcher Herman Marquez was designated for assignment. That makes room for the addition of Robbie Ray on the Padres roster. Marquez was a key member of the rotation this year when he was healthy, so he is removed from that Padres rotation. We'll see if he can catch on somewhere else. Next outfielder Ronnie Simon was selected from the minors by the Pirates. The 26-year-old switch hitter had a brief taste of the majors last year, but he's taken his game to another level at AAA this year, batting 330 with 7 homers, 33 steals, and a 137 WRC+. Simon figures to be on the strong side of a DH platoon for the Pirates, replacing designated hitter Marcell Ozuna, who was released. He has not been spectacular this year, and I would be surprised if Ozuna finds a new home. This is probably it for his career at this point. Next, starting pitcher Kyle Harrison was activated from the 15-day IL to start versus the Pirates. He had missed the past month recovering from forearm tightness, and he didn't miss a beat in his return, tossing 5 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit and 1 walk while striking out 10. He induced 12 whiffs with 45% CSW across 69 pitches, and Harrison got right back to doing the things he was doing before his injury, earning the King Cole by leading baseball with that 45% CSW, though it wasn't as convincing as the line suggests. The movement on Harrison's pitches was slightly worse, so was the velocity, and he didn't pull off the perfect pitch separation of a BSB Blake Snell blueprint approach like he was earlier in the season with fastballs upstairs and curveballs low. Harrison was definitely lucky to rack up 10 strikeouts thanks to an 83% put away rate, and I think this was a little bit of blame it on the Pirates because they've struggled against southpaws all year, and that was the case again here. Harrison is also still unable to find his changeup to give him a third pitch to support that four seam and curveball, and honestly, I've been surprised that he's been pitching so well this year with just those two pitches. And there is a little bit of, you know, some intrigue here, as if you look at his pitch movement plot, it suggests that Harrison may be throwing a variant of his breaker that looks a little bit like a slider or a sweeper instead of that curveball, because it comes in a couple ticks harder with less drop. And I'm not sure if it was just inconsistent deliveries or an actual new pitch for Harrison, but it is worth keeping an eye on. He's been searching for a third pitch to support his arsenal all year, and honestly throughout the entirety of his career. And we'll keep starting Harrison, obviously, but there are signs that suggest this dominant start wasn't an immediate return to form. Reliever Grant Anderson was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, shortstop Angel Hinau. And yes, I looked it up. I pronounced it wrong yesterday, but Angel Hinau was recalled from the minors by the Guardians. He's their number 2 prospect, and he's the number 39 prospect in baseball. He's a 22-year-old switch hitter who at AA and AAA batted 299 with 11 homers, 11 steals, and a 130 WRC+. He walked 14% of the time with a 16% strikeout rate, and Hinau is very Cleveland-coded with that contact-oriented approach. He doesn't strike out. He nearly walks more than he strikes out. He's got the power and the speed, and he's a switch hitter. So very much the type of player we see come out of the Guardians minor leagues often. Very similar to Jose Ramirez, who he filled in for at third base in his debut, as Jose Ramirez is dealing with a minor injury. But it's sort of unclear where he now fits full time. I think Brian Rocchio has been struggling at shortstop, so he now could just take over at shortstop. I could also see Chase DeLauder vacating the DH role and moving to the outfield to allow he now or another infielder to get into the lineup at DH. But the Guardians are going to be pretty excited to get him in the lineup constantly. He had 4 hits in his major league debut, becoming just the 22nd player ever with 4 hits in his major league debut. So he now definitely looked legit in his first taste of the majors. Third baseman Gabriel Arias was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, starting pitcher Clay Holmes is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL on Saturday to start in Kansas City. Holmes has missed the past about 3 months after fracturing his leg on a comebacker, and he'll be making his Cubs debut on Saturday in Kansas City. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Wednesday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with outfielder Pete Crow Armstrong, who helped the Cubs to win against the Dodgers, going 3-for-5 with 2 runs, a double, 2 home runs, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 26 home runs now. The first one went 420 feet at 102 miles per hour, and the second one went 405 feet at 104 miles per hour. PCA has been absolutely incredible this year. I'm pretty sure he's second in baseball in F4. He's also 9th in baseball with those 26 home runs. He's 5th in MLB with those 28 stolen bases. I think one of the few handful of players that have the possibility of going 30-30 this season. He's almost definitely going 30-30 this season. PCA's league-leading stats don't stop there. He's 8th in MLB with 124 hits, 2nd with 7 triples, 3rd in MLB with 78 runs, and 4th with a 938 OPS. pretty incredible. And I don't think we're going to see the second half fall off from PCA that we saw last year. And if not for a one-of-a-kind player, I think PCA is your obvious NL MVP. And speaking of, designated hitter Shohei Ohtani did all he could on the opposite side of PCA, but the Dodgers lost on the north side of Chicago. Ohtani went 3-for-5 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 26 homers now. The first one went 376 feet at 110 miles per hour, and the second one went 367 feet at 101 miles per hour. Ohtani is second in baseball and OPS with a 953 OPS, and since taking a break from pitching in early July, he's made up for that by taking his performance at the plate to another level, batting 326 with 8 home runs and a 168 WRC plus. Since then, Ohtani is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Outfielder Tim Tawa helped the Diamondbacks to win against the Padres, going 3-for-4 with 2 runs, a home run, and 2 runs batted in. It was his 6th homer of the year, and it traveled 414 feet at 106 miles per hour. Tawa hadn't been a consistent member of the Arizona lineup until early July, which coincides with his most recent promotion from the minors. Since then, he's not only gotten regular playing time at first base and in the outfield, but Tawa's also performed his best at the plate, batting 276 with 5 homers and a 112 WRC plus, and his 11% barrel rate during that time supports the power surge. And it's not like this is out of nowhere for Tawa. At AA and AAA in 2024, he hit 31 home runs in the minors. Arizona appears committed to playing Tawa every day, and he's rewarded them for doing so, and I think he's worth rostering in deeper leagues right now, especially with his positional versatility making him even more appealing. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Wednesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Mitch Bratt, who helped the Diamondbacks to win against the Padres, tossing 7 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit, walking 3 while striking out 9. He induced 8 whiffs with 29% CSW across 92 pitches, and this was a super surprising start after Bratt recorded just 12 strikeouts across his first 5 career starts. He racked up 9 here, but his low 90s four-seamer was an incredible put-away pitch to propel him to those strikeouts with 6 strikeouts here. The low 90s fastball skirted damage all game, stealing 10 called strikes and returning 5 outs on 6 balls in play. That was the only hit he allowed, was off that fastball. But the rest of Bratt's arsenal was sort of just there. Everything else combined for just 3 whiffs and sub 50% strikes. And overall, he went 11 outs on 12 balls in play while finishing off a 3/4 of the counts in which he got to 2 strikes with a strikeout, and he had fewer whiffs than strikeouts. This seems like the epitome of an unsustainable outing, but it's dope to see Bratt have the best start of his young career. He'll get a cushy matchup with Rocky Road next to attempt to recreate this magic, though it's not something that I am looking to chase in fantasy leagues. Next, Jacob Lopez did all he could, but the A's lost in Cincinnati. He tossed 5 innings, allowing 4 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 1 while striking out 9, inducing 13 whiffs with 29% CSW across 87 pitches. And in recent starts, Lopez had been hinting at going on a second half run, similar to the incredible stretch he had last year. And I think it's all but confirmed now that it is happening again. That's a 2.29 ERA and a 33% strikeout rate across Lopez's last 4 starts, thanks to excellent command of a BSP approach and a cannonball McSanchez. In other words, he pulls off a Blake Snell blueprint with fastballs upstairs and breakers down low, and the cannonball McSanchez, which is sort of an intertwining of four-seamers and cutters upstairs, where four-seamers rise above the zone and cutters dive into it, leading to called strikes and whiffs on both of those pitches, and it keeps batters guessing. And then he also pulls off the Blake Snell blueprint, or I've coined the bunk bed approach, with sliders falling beneath the high fastballs. They fell to the bottom of the zone and got plenty of called strikes and whiffs, and if Lopez can figure out his changeup, which has been completely missing all year, there's an even higher ceiling for him to reach, and I'm willing to ride with Lopez as a strikeout option moving forward. He hosts the Tampa Bay Rays next. Next, we've got Noah Cameron, who helped the Royals to win against the Twins, tossing 8 innings, allowing 2 hits and 1 run, walking 1 while striking out 9. He induced 17 whiffs with 30% CSW across 106 pitches. And speaking of pitchers looking to repeat hot second half runs, Cameron has finally locked in his command and has been dominating recently, looking like the pitcher that was rostered universally last year. He's allowed just 1 total run across his last 3 starts while completing at least 7 frames in each of them and racking up at least 7 strikeouts in each of them. Changeups and sliders are dominating for Cameron, while a trio of fastball variants avoid damage. At this point, I'd say he's a must roster everywhere, but he heads to Hollywood next to take on the Dodgers. If you want it, you can go for it. I think he's going to be picked up everywhere if he dominates there. And obviously, if he survives there, it's all systems go for Noah Cameron. Lastly, we have Tanner Bibee, who did all he could, but the Guardians lost to the Mets. He tossed 5 2/3 innings, allowing 4 hits and 3 earned runs, walking nobody. While striking out 10, he induced 17 whiffs with 34% CSW across 98 pitches. And Bibee set a season high with 10 strikeouts, recording a strikeout with all 6 of his pitches. Changeups were the most effective with 7 whiffs and 50% CSW against left-handed batters. And if not for a trio of solo home runs, this start would have looked very impressive from Bibee. Regardless, those 10 strikeouts are impressive in their own right. I'm not sure there's anything to suggest, though, that the strikeout ceiling is sustainable from Bibee, but I'm totally fine testing it out in Detroit next, given the safe floor that he has laid this year. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Wednesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Chase Lee, starting with the former, Chase Lee worked around the zombie runner, scoring in the 10th for his first save. Louis Varland pitched a scoreless 9th in a tie game in that one and earned his 4th win when the Blue Jays took the lead. Jacob Webb pitched a perfect 9th for his 6th save. Andrew Kittredge recorded his 5th save with a perfect 9th. Yennier Cano pitched a perfect 8th for his 10th hold in that one, and he faced the bottom of the order. But this feels like a pure co-closer situation where Kittredge and Cano are sort of just going to switch off. Daniel Duarte recorded his first save with a hitless 10th. Apparently, Devin Williams was unavailable due to a little bit of arm fatigue, but he should be available today. Emilio Pagan pitched a perfect 9th for his 13th save. Riley O'Brien recorded his 27th save with a hitless 9th. Didier Fuentes had a perfect 4-out save for his 2nd save of the year. I'm not sure why Raisel Iglesias did not pitch in that one. Steven Cruz pitched a perfect 9th for his 3rd save of the year, and I think he's just the Royals' closer moving forward. Trevor McGill recorded his 20th save with a perfect 9th, and Andres Munoz recorded his 20th save with a perfect 9th. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Josh Hader pitched a scoreless 9th in a tie game that the Astros would go on to lose in 10 innings. Ben Joyce pitched a hitless 7th with the Angels trailing by 1, and it's unclear who the Angels' closer is right now, though it's likely Joyce, Fermin, or Natera Jr. Cade Smith allowed an unearned run in the 9th inning to blow his 5th save, but the Guardians would go on to lose in 10 innings. Yoan Duran pitched a scoreless 9th in a tie game. The Phillies would go on to lose in 11 innings. Clayton Beter allowed the zombie runner to score in the 10th to blow his 6th save, but he earned his 4th win when the Nationals reclaimed the lead and won it in 11. And lastly, Jeff Hoffman pitched a perfect 8th, trailing by 1. He hadn't pitched since last Saturday, so this was a maintenance outing in his Twins debut. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Thursday, August 6th, the day in which we'll have just 11 games on the slate. My matchup of the day is Nolan McLean versus Foster Griffin. McLean has been great this year. He's always fun to watch pitch, and we'll see Foster Griffin make his Guardians debut, so that's going to be fun to watch. We'll see if he can carry over the magic that he had with the Nationals. In terms of probable starters, we've got 3 guys in the auto starts tier, including McLean. We've also got Dylan Cease on the north side of Chicago, and Christopher Sanchez versus the Nationals. Our probably starts tier has 4 guys, and our questionable starts tier has 6, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Dustin May versus the Pirates. May has been very reliable this year. He's also proven to have a ceiling worth chasing. He's making his Brewers debut. I feel like the defense behind him could make him even better with his ability to get a bunch of ground balls. I also feel like the Brewers pitching development could allow May to take in another step forward. And I'm really excited to see what he looks like in his Brewers debut. I'd also keep an eye out for David Peterson versus the Blue Jays. Peterson has looked a lot stronger since going to the Cubs. He's been commanding a lot better, and he's facing the Blue Jays, which is surprisingly one of the worst offenses in baseball. It's actually the worst offense in baseball versus southpaws, according to WRC Plus. And Peterson is a lefty, so I will be targeting Peterson everywhere versus Toronto. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd target A's and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark, one of the best hitters parks in baseball. We'll see Mason Barnett square off against Andrew Abbott in that one. I'd also target Phillies hitters versus Miles Michaelis in Citizens Bank Park. Michaelis has a 5.67 ERA on the season. I'd also look at Royals hitters versus Bailey Ober. He throws 87 miles per hour, so the Royals should have no problem turning around his fastball. And lastly, I target Padres and Diamondbacks hitters in Chase Field. We'll see Walker Buehler square off against Cole Drake in that one, neither of whom have been very strong this year. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Both Yennier Cano and Andrew Kittredge have pitched on back-to-back days, and so has Rico Garcia. So Grant Wolfram is probably the top option for a save out of the Orioles bullpen. Steven Cruz has pitched on back-to-back days, so one of Alex Lang or Lucas Erceg are likely to be called upon by manager Matt Quatraro. Jacob Webb has pitched on back-to-back days, but so has Ryan Zephyrjohn, so one of Trent Thornton or Caleb Thielbar are your best options for a save out of the Cubs bullpen. Emilio Pagan has pitched on back-to-back days, so the trio of candidates out of Cincinnati that could get you a save are TJ Anton, Brock Burke, and Pierce Johnson. And lastly, Trevor McGill has pitched on back-to-back days, but so have both Abner Uribe and Antonio Sensatella, so Aaron Ashby should be the top option for a save out of the Brewers bullpen. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. Carson Picard will be with you tomorrow and throughout the weekend. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.